This is Scripture Read Badly,
a podcast where two grown-up pastors' kids discuss the stories of the Bible in chronological order,
attempting to avoid heresy and generally having a good time.
I'm Jeremy.
And I'm Ryan.
Sit back and rejoice. Today's verse comes from Leviticus 21, verse 17. Speak to Aaron and say, no one of your offspring throughout their generations who has a blemish may approach the offer to offer the food of his God. For no one who has a blemish shall draw near. No one with a broken foot or a broken hand or a hunchback or a dwarf or a man with a blemish in his eye or an itching disease or scabs or crushed testicles. Mm. So, sorry, Hunchback of Notre Dame, you can't come.
And neither can anyone with pimples, apparently. Blemishes.
Yeah, or crushed testicles, which I don't know what that means. Oh. Does that mean, like, they have to be injured?
Oh.
That sounds terrible. Why would he be walking around? Anyway, this is Scripture Read Badly. I'm Jeremy Barry Randall, and with me is my friend Luke.
Luke? My name is Ryan,
yeah,
Luke.
Yeah, your name is... What?
Right.
Why can't I just call you Luke? Sometimes I'll just call you Luke.
No. Well,
or just Winslow.
Sometimes I'll just call Windy. You Barry then. How do you
That's
feel
fine.
About
that? People do that all the time.
Okay, fine.
Hey, Windy.
All right.
In fact, I've been the man of like 100 nicknames. I prefer when people give me a unique nickname so that that one person calls me that one thing. The funniest I've had so far was I gave... Do you know how, anyway, I'm not going to say her name. But one of my friends was Flappy Udder for a while. And so for a while, she was either Flaps or Uds. She had like three different nicknames.
Oh my goodness.
It was the best.
Yeah, my name is Ryan, but while we're off on this tangent at the very beginning of the episode, so my middle name is Luke, and it's not very common for me to actually go by Ryan Luke in public. When I introduce myself to people, it's always as Ryan, being very careful to enunciate so that people don't think I'm saying Brian or Wayne. Apparently,
hey, Wayne.
Wayne's been a recent one. But there have been very odd times in my life where people that I've never met before have introduced themselves to me and for some reason just said, your name's Luke, isn't it? And I've just gone, what? How? What? No, it's not. My middle name's Luke. How do you know that? And they're just like, I don't know. You look like a Luke. Well, sorry, but I'm a Ryan.
Yeah. Sorry.
But there really have been a large number of times. Large number? No, not a very large
yeah, a
number.
Yeah, a large number.
There have been several times in very, very
An
different settings
number.
Where people that I haven't even met before have just called out the name Luke at me. And it's been very, very weird. And some people that know my name is Ryan randomly call me Luke. Often accidentally.
Like I just did.
Like you did just then. Yeah. So it's not very uncommon. But today we are talking about Leviticus. Back to the topic at hand. we are going to be finishing up the book of Leviticus. Everybody's favorite portion of the Torah or the Pentateuch or the books of Moses
Pentateuch.
Or the law. So it is the third book of the Bible, quite arguably the least interesting or at least most boring of the the first part of the Bible. There is no narrative that occurs other than a couple of very small stories which have ramifications like the death of Aaron's sons and so on. But for the most part, it's just laws that are given to the people of Israel, instructions about how to live, how not to live, and various things that they are supposed to uphold in relation to being priests and having the tabernacle and things like that. So,
but the book can get interesting if you give it its own narrative. Like you take a verse and be like, why did this come about? What happened so that God had to tell them this?
Yes, that's right. This
Which
is,
we'll probably be doing later this episode.
Yeah, this is a book that you have to go digging, or at least I've had to go digging to find interest in. And I think the Bible Project did a great job at that in their
digging
in their overview video. No, at expressing how boring it can be, but then in a very simple way explaining why Leviticus is important. And I found I found that very insightful. To have the three different types of laws that are given, those in relation to sacrifice and feasts, and then those in relation to the priesthood and the tabernacle, and then those in relation to purification and cleanliness and that type of thing, with the Day of Atonement and that type of thing right in this smack bag in the middle.
Smack bag. It's a bag of smack. That's what you carry your own smack in.
And then going back to cleanliness, priesthood, and then sacrifices. So it was a very helpful video in helping me gain some perspective in this book that I have very often given up reading through all the books of the Bible during, which is quite sad because it's only 200 pages into my Bible. And that's including all the introductory pages for the books and that type of thing. So we are going to skip over chapter 20, which talks about child sacrifice. We kind of talked about that with the god Molech and how God said, don't sacrifice to him because it's bad. And that makes sense. That was something that the other inhabitants of the land were doing. There are punishments for sexual immorality, which is often either being kicked out of the land, out of the nation, or being killed. And there were specific reasons for those that we're not going to get into. You can look them up. God again says, you shall be holy. He's just reiterating the motivation behind all these laws that he's given. Then there's holiness and the priests. I'm just reading the section titles at this point. Acceptable offerings. And then we get to chapter 23 of Leviticus, which, Jeremy, I understand you want to talk a little bit about. Chapter 23.
I just like that in the midst of all of this, you have to give this, you have to do this properly, you have to wear these funny clothes, don't kill your babies.
Yep.
Then he goes into this big thing of, I'm going to appoint festivals that you have to celebrate. Like, you must celebrate. You must eat all of this food. Yeah. You must do all of these cool, fun things together. You must have fun. Exactly. And so some of them are like celebrations of harvest. Some of them are celebrations of remembering some things that God took them through.
Yeah.
One of them's even called the Festival of Trumpets. So I hope that there's lots of trumpets involved.
There's at least one ska band.
That is the best. Hopefully there's Mighty Mighty Boss Tones, but the Jewish version. And then included in these appointed festivals is, of course, the Day of Atonement that we talked about two episodes ago. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of these things are legitimately, on the first day you shall take the fruit of majestic trees, branches of palm trees, boughs of leafy trees, and you shall rejoice before the Lord. Like, just get a lot of leaves and like flap them around and have a good old time. And it's just so fun that this is a part of the rituals and the rhythms of life that God wants to do them. Because it's all through the year. It's not just like one day a year they have a big party. It's like on the first day of this month, of the first day of this month, and remember this thing because of this day.
Yeah.
Which is connected with the Sabbath and Passover and stuff like that. And then we get to chapter 25, which talks about these 2 years that I want to talk about.
Yeah.
The first one is the sabbatical year.
Hang on, but before we get to the sabbatical year, which is going to be an interesting topic, I want to ask you something about these feasts. So God instructs the people of Israel to celebrate them, or to remember them, as he puts it.
Yep.
And so there are different things like the Passover, which has in many, many people's lives, they still celebrate that today, and that's great. And I believe that it is healthy to celebrate the Passover, and also healthy to include Jesus in it if you want. That could be a cool little Easter thing to do one time if you want to shake things up, if it's not your normal.
Yep.
But God never instructs in the New Testament for us to celebrate Easter, but that is kind of our adaptation of Passover for non-Jewish people mostly, but then it has become a worldwide thing. But he never ever instructs to celebrate Christmas. What are your thoughts on that?
On Christmas and its ridiculousness?
Well, yeah, and the fact that God never instructs us to celebrate it, but it has become one of the most important things in the church calendar. Obviously, there is significance to the story of Christmas. I understand that. I'm not trying to belittle that. Yeah. But the fact that we were never instructed to celebrate Christmas and it has become such a big deal. What's your take on that?
Maybe I'll Google it later, but I wonder if it was the whole corporatization of it,
mm-hmm.
that at one stage it was just a celebration and a feast that certain pockets of the community would celebrate.
Yeah.
And then it got bigger and bigger because of that time of year in most of the world.
Yeah.
It gets cold and you want to like gather and you want to celebrate together as a family. And then as families started spread around,
I think it used to be a pagan holiday. Time of year.
Do you remember what sort? Like what used to happen during it?
No, but I think it was a Roman holiday. So I get the feeling that there was something to do with Constantine and when he became a Christian and enforced Christianity on the whole Roman Empire. I feel like that may have been the time where things shifted, or it could have been in the wake of that. I'm not exactly sure about that.
And I feel like the church has done that a lot, where it's like, oh, the pagans are celebrating something. Let's celebrate something else on that day and try and take it over.
Yeah.
Which is also echoed through, like, the music scene. Like, oh, we'll do the same kind of music as the secular guys, but we'll put Jesus in there and that'll make it good, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which doesn't necessarily work, but Christmas seems to have clicked with a lot of people so that it has become quite a big deal.
Maybe God never instructed people to celebrate it because he knew it was going to be a fairly natural thing.
Maybe. Or maybe he just... Well, he wouldn't have instructed the Jews to celebrate Jesus.
Yes.
Right? The Jews wouldn't want it.
That's
the
true.
Jews wouldn't have been all about that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I wonder if his birth story was a big deal to them back in the day.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Because they would have known Mary, the mother of Jesus, because she was hanging around with them a lot.
Mary, the mother of Jesus.
And there was even the account of John being at the foot of the cross with Jesus' mother and Jesus saying, look, this is now your mother. Treat her as your mother and you treat him as your son. So that shows that Jesus' family, or at least his mother, was closely involved. And James, the brother of Jesus, who ended up writing one of the epistles, was the brother of Jesus. So they would have known when he was born, and they would have known the family story. But I don't... I think to begin with, it was probably one of those stories that Mary told as a testimony. Like we would tell of a significant moment that God revealed himself to us in our lives and how that had eternal consequences within our own lives. That would have been one of those stories for her. I'm sure she and Joseph would have looked at each other and said, you're never going to believe this. And then told a group of people the story and it would have been amazing, but they never would have said, and we should celebrate it at the end of the at the end of the whatever calendar we use now year, because Jesus wasn't born then, clearly. But I think it was a testimony that, because it was picked up by the Gospels of Matthew and Luke in particular, I think that probably had a lot of significance in the foundation of the early church, because they would have only had those gospels and then some of the epistles as well, but not all of them. So when they were gathering together these sacred accounts of Jesus, they would have committed these things to memory and made a big deal of them, because they are a big deal. But at the time of happening, they probably weren't as people wouldn't have necessarily had a massive party. They would have had a celebration that Jesus was born, but it would have been a family thing. They wouldn't have had a community festival or anything like that. So what I was trying to get at with this whole question was, because Christmas is significant, and even though God didn't necessarily instruct us to celebrate it, it is worth celebrating. But over time, it has become this hallmark holiday where things are attributed to it that a lot of people growing up today don't even know the origins of Christmas. They just know it's Santa and elves and snow and reindeer and all that type of thing.
Yeah.
And it doesn't make any sense to people. And even with Easter, they know there's the Easter weekend is great because you get 4 days off. That's fantastic. Everyone wants a 4-day long weekend. But people don't know why Good Friday is celebrated, because they aren't told about Jesus. People don't know why Easter itself is celebrated, even though that was an adapted pagan holiday as well. But also the Passover, that time of year. But they took the name Easter from a Roman holiday or something like that. So there are ways that these holidays have evolved, and I wonder if there were any weird traditions that crept into these Jewish festivals over time that weren't originally there, that kind of obscured the true meaning of these festivals.
I see where you've gone.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So feel free to comment on that. That's what I was trying to get to the whole time.
Heavily likely, because in 25, that we'll get to soon, arguably it was never done.
Okay.
Like the Jubilee year.
Yeah.
But they were God's intentions that people would celebrate and people would gather and people would have these rhythms of life.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wonder if Christmas is just the natural rhythm of life that we've come to, which has similar principles involved.
Mm-hmm.
And then I wonder if, because I'm more of a progressivist, if as the Jews set up camp and had these cities and had these different cultural changes, if these festivals changed as well in a positive way, not just a negative way.
Mm-hmm.
Or with Christmas, I wonder if someone figured they could turn a profit by selling the beautiful leaves of the trees, and then it became more of a let's see how many leaves we can sell instead of let's celebrate by waving the leaves.
Yeah, well, that was kind of what happened in the temple when Jesus made the cat of nine tails and was driving people out. They were selling animals for sacrifices and things and turning something that God had instructed them in Leviticus to be a holy, sacred thing, turning a profit from it. So, yes, I agree. I think that is a way that it could very easily sell out and even become commercialized somewhat. And I'm sure that there were Jews that only observed these festivals because everyone else did. They didn't actually care about it. They were more of a Passover, First Fruits, Feast of Weeks, Feast of Booths and Day of Atonement kind of Jew, as opposed to an every weekend in the synagogue, like a Christmas and Easter Christian, but with a lot more festivals. And that happens in every society, with every dominant religion, and even in healthy Christian communities, there are people that just going through the motions, and we all go through that at different times in our lives, and I think that is to be expected. And I don't think God was I don't think he is too upset if people go through these different stages of life where it's hard for them to feel motivated to go to church every week, because they have to kind of relearn the reasons and that type of thing. So you mentioned something about how you don't think that things were ever truly celebrated properly or something like that. Is that what you said?
No. Just the research I've done for the Jubilee year.
Okay.
Is that it wasn't celebrated. I think all of these festivals were, because these are part of their calendar, like in the year.
Yeah. Okay, so we're in chapter 25 now, if you're following along at home. And so we're talking about the Sabbath year and the year of Jubilee. So, Jeremy, why don't you take it away? Because you're quite passionate about this and you wanted to get to it.
Oh, I love them. So the sabbatical year was this idea that every 7 years you give the land rest.
Mm-hmm.
And during that year, you just eat whatever's on the land without cultivating it. And it was also an idea that you had to trust God for your food and for your stuff.
Yep.
And it was also a year of rest and a year to be together with your family and to be together with God and be. It was like a supercharged version of the Sabbath. And the Sabbath is the idea of resting and reviewing and looking at the good things you have.
Yeah.
Together with family. And so the cool thing in my mind is if you tracked throughout your life, every seventh year, you just take off work and you just trust God for things and your whole life revolves around rest and enjoyment
mm-hmm.
of each other, how strong societies would be.
That would be like so cool.
As a 21-year-old who's been working on my dad's farm for a while,
mm-hmm.
takes a year off, and let's say I'm married and I have a kid,
yep.
and my household gets to just chill and hang out for a year, we get close.
Yeah.
And we go on adventures, maybe.
Yeah.
And then, again, when we're 28, when we've got, like, 3 or 4 kids, again, we get to take a year off and rest.
Yeah.
And then, again and again and again and again, families, in theory, if you were good at being family, you could just get into fights for the whole year. But
mm-hmm.
your society and your families would get so much more closer. And back then, they wouldn't have Netflix to just chill in front of. They'd actually have to hang out
yeah.
or explore. And then the idea of the... Oh, and it was also to give the land rest, because apparently in farming theory, you have to give land rest.
Yeah.
And then in the Jubilee year, it was the 49th year. And so once a lifetime, you would have this... the Sabbath year, which was the seventh,
mm-hmm.
where you'd give rest to the land and your family. And then the 49th year would be you give back all of the lands that's been sold because of debt or whatever to the original owners.
Yeah.
And so all of the tribes were given different lands, and sometimes a tribe would be going through bad years, and so they'd have to sell themselves and their land to another family. And the Jubilee year was the year that all of the slaves got to be set free and all of the lands were returned to their original owners.
Yep.
And so a part of the reason, I think, and a part of the cool thing about this is that every generation gets a chance to make something of themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have one family who's really successful one generation and buys everyone's land... For in our societies, that land now owns to that family, or is it now owned by that family forever,
mm-hmm.
and the rest of the families don't really have much of a chance to get back into the farming business because they yep. don't own the land.
Yeah.
And so they would be slaves in perpetuity. Whereas this system is, if you... And that means that if you're the son of that guy who owns all the land, you don't really have to do much work, but you're instantly... a millionaire
yeah.
or whatever.
Yep.
But if I have a son and I know that in his generation he's going to get the land back, I'm not going to collect money for him. I'm going to collect knowledge and I'm going to collect systems and I'm going to teach him how to do certain things
mm-hmm.
so that when he gets the land, he can steward it good.
Yeah.
As opposed to a lot of families who are like, I'm just going to make a lot of money and give my son a lot of money, but that son doesn't necessarily know how to use that money. Or what to do with his life.
Yeah.
And so then during these sabbatical years, during the 50 years, you have these moments where families get to disciple their children in a way of like, this is how the land works, and this is how fruit works, and this is how trade with your neighbours works, and this is why you would respect everyone, because we're going to be living next door to each other for the rest of time. Mm-hmm. And then in the 50th year, everyone gets their land back.
Yeah.
And I think it's just...
I absolutely love this idea. A beautiful
thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it would be so hard to do.
Yes.
And I don't think in history it's been done many times. Because if you spend your 50 years of life collecting lots of money, you're not just going to give it away. But that would be like the ultimate, I trust you, God, for the future. By working your whole life on this one project and then just being like, all right, here it is. Bye.
Yeah. So it's a celebration. It's a celebration year where...
Yep.
So jubilation is the name of the game here, and part of that, as you said, is freedom. It's giving things back to people that used to own them. It's setting slaves free. It's essentially returning to your roots and doing a bit of a reset. But I feel like it's in a way that is aimed at glorifying God and and celebrating the past 49 years.
Exactly.
So I think one of the first times I read through this, when I was doing one of my many attempts to read through the whole Bible, still unsuccessful, I got to the point where I thought, imagine if everybody's 50th year of life wasn't just one where they went, yeah, it's a milestone, but it's one where they just went crazy with compassion and joy and kindness and just gave things to people. If it was a year of radical giving and trusting in God to provide, then I think the world would be absolutely insane right now.
Yeah.
Everyone, there would be a person every day all over the world celebrating their 50th year of life, or beginning the 50th year of life. And so then there would be generosity and compassion and joy and kindness everywhere that you looked. And then when it was finally your turn, you could add to the celebration. And then I just think it would be so amazing. So I thought, what is 2043 going to look like for me? Because that'll be my 50th birthday. At the end of 2043, that's when I'm gonna go nuts with this. And
just give away stuff.
Yeah, give things away. Give family heirlooms back to people that used to own them. And, and not only that, but I feel like it's a year of new beginnings. And I think that was what God was wanting to show here. It wasn't just getting to the end of the race so that you can celebrate. It was then beginning another race with the heart of celebration at its core.
Yeah.
So I love the idea of the year of Jubilee. And so whether it's you personally, whether it's 50 years of marriage, whether it's 50 years of an organization or a company you work for, or whatever it is, 50 years of a country, I think these are things that need to be celebrated. Yes, centenaries are important, but if you think about it, centenaries are just the second year of Jubilee. And so I think if as a global culture we embrace the year of Jubilee, which God willing will happen one day, I feel like it will... it's probably going to happen in the new earth, I think, is what I'm trying to say there. I think it's going to be so...
What, Tasmania?
Tasmania will be in the new earth. Come on, man. So I think Year of Jubilee is beautiful, and it's something that it's really easy just to have it very disconnected, I think, from where we are. And we can think, way in the future, I can have my year of Jubilee. It'll be awesome. But thinking about the Sabbath year, this is something that it's very easy to think is a good idea. But then when it comes the end of the sixth year and you think, man, I was going to get a promotion next year, or I was going to start this this new thing, or whatever it is, it's going to cost money. Yeah. I'm going to sign up for Disney's streaming service. Whatever it is, it's there are all the worries of life, and I think also because a lot of workplaces are not even familiar with this idea of taking a year off and then giving you your job back once you get back into it. I think that is one of the biggest things standing in the way here. I love the idea because I've lived by faith before, and in a sense I'm living by faith in a different kind of way now that I have a job and I'm studying and I'm trying to provide for my wife, and it's a different kind of thing. But I have been in the situation before where I've had no money to my name, and God has called me to do X, Y, and Z, and He's had to provide as long as I was able to trust Him. And so I think the Sabbath year, if you think about it, even with the story of Joseph, when he said 7 years of plenty and 7 years of famine, with that as a model, even though it's not six, with the seventh year being whatever, similar kind of thing. So the perfect number, the first 6 years, you can be saving up enough, like God with the manna on the ground, where you have to save up enough for the following day. You can be saving up enough so that the seventh year, every seventh year is a year of rest, celebration, connection with family and the community, compassion, reconnecting with God. I think this is possible, and not only that, I think it should be pursued. But it's really easy to say that, but then get to the sixth year and think, no, maybe next time. So I don't know, this is something that I'll be praying about in 5-6 years time, when my wife and I are about to enter into our seventh year of marriage. I think this is this is going to be a fantastic way to go about it. Or if I really wanted, I could slip into now and think every 7 years of my life, so 21, so then the next one for me would be 28. When I turn 28, that'll be a year of trusting in God. But I don't know, hopeful.
Just do it.
Yeah.
Just get it done.
Maybe I will. That's only in... that's in about 5 years, so... no, it's in four... I don't know, 3.5. Anyway, back to the Sabbath year. So, redemption of property, as we already said, was one of the key components of the Sabbath year. And kindness for poor brothers and redeeming a poor man. These are all things that are... as a result of following through the year of Jubilee and the Sabbath year. So do you have anything else to say about these two special years?
Just there was this, I once shared at a youth group about how we can read the Bible and how the Bible can come into our reality, even though it wasn't written to us directly. Mm-hmm. And I started talking about this and started asking questions like, what does this look like in our real life? Like, if the owner of McDonald's every 50 years just sold everything and gave their son the first shop to see if he could build it into an empire as well. And what would this look like for society if people would take the seventh year off to rest? And this guy in the front row was just like, oh, society would collapse. And I was like, what? He's like, yeah. Like, all the planes would fall out of the sky and then nothing would get done because everyone would just stop working that year. Yeah. And I was like, whoa. I hadn't thought everyone would take it on the same year. Yeah. And I had assumed that not everyone would have done it, just like a certain amount of people. But he was thinking, whoa, if everyone stopped working for 1 year,
if everyone got
everything
sync,
would collapse.
Yeah. Wow.
And I was like, all right, yeah, true. That would be terrible. But yeah. I'm not sure that's the point of what I was trying to make.
No, I do not think that that is what you were getting at there.
No. But then at the other sense is, what if it's not every seventh year? What if it's just every, like, a seventh of every year you go on holidays? And so
Everyone at the same time?
Australia gets... No, just people.
Yeah.
So Australia gets 4 to 6 weeks a year. And I don't know what fraction of the year that is. That's not even a fifth. Anyway. And so I wonder if that whole deal was the same... was similar to this. Like, hey, we can't take every seventh year off, but we can take a seventh of the year off and then come back to work. But then I know a lot of people who don't take their yearly holidays either because they're so busy, in quotation marks,
yeah,
that they can't take chill out time. And I think that's what God was avoiding with the Sabbath originally.
Yes.
So that's all.
Yeah. I love holidays. Holidays are very important.
I'm not great at holidays, but I seem to think they're okay.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it? Because I feel like as a busy society, or quote-unquote busy society, we get in our heads that we are missing out on productivity and accomplishing things that we should have the capacity to do if we take time off to rest. And I even feel that studying online, because 5 days out of the week I have schoolwork available to me, but I try and get it done in the first, second and third day of the week so that I can work the other yep. two and then have a couple of days off, one of them a lot more restful than the other, but at the same time I feel like if I'm not working while I'm resting, if I'm not studying, then I'm getting behind. And in a sense, that's true because I had a lot of things to do and I had a lot of other distractions at the same time. But, yeah, I'm just going to leave that there and ask you this question. Do you think God would approve of 2 days off every week? A weekend?
Yeah. I think he also approves freelancers that only work 2 days a week.
Good. Okay.
I think he's very flexible with that.
Yeah.
I don't think he's a fan of sloth or laziness, but if you're good at your job and you have plans on days off.
Okay.
I think that's solid.
Right. Because work doesn't just... relate to earning an income. It can also be working with your hands or doing something active or constructive in the community or with family and friends and all that type of thing. So for someone like me, my ideal lifestyle is where I'm working 3 days a week full-time. Video production would be exhausting, but if I did that and then I was able to take a couple days to do other creative things like writing or songwriting or something like that, and then I could have a couple of days off, I would feel like I'm working the days that I am doing something that I enjoy, like writing and to an extent video production as well. But I think you were right when you said God approves of taking a lot of days off as long as we're not doing it out of a spirit of laziness.
Yeah.
I think. Okay. Right. Because if you're not taking a complete day off where you're just lying in bed, I'm sure if anybody listening has ever done that and you've spent almost an entire day just being in the one position, doing the one thing, you've felt quite lazy. Or at least you get to the end of the day and you're like, oh, I just want this day to be over. I haven't really enjoyed it. But then you go into the next week with a ferocity and a fervor that you didn't have the previous week. And I've definitely felt that, where either I've been sick or I've been recovering and I'm mostly well, where I could go to work, but people have insisted I stay home. So I'm just at home playing video games or whatever it is. And I get to the end of the day and I feel like I need to work tomorrow. It's going to be good for me, and I'm looking forward to it, even if I don't necessarily enjoy my job. I think it's built into us to require rest, but also to require work. So,
yep.
Sabbath years. I like the idea.
Me too.
So the last couple of chapters of Leviticus, as we round this corner, is God is giving some blessings for obedience. Once again, reiterating the fact that he wants us to obey his commandments and follow all his decrees. And if we do, we'll be blessed. And conversely, if we break the covenant and if we don't do what he has instructed, then we will encounter punishments.
And this is reflected again in the end of Deuteronomy and then referred back to by Jeremiah tons.
Yeah.
This is like their agreement.
Yes, yes, exactly. That
God will keep pointing to.
Yeah. So this, I studied covenants when I was in high school. It was one of my assignments, covenants in the Bible.
Nice.
And the key components of covenants are that they are agreements. That's a key component. It is an agreement, an accord that is reached by two consenting parties. But then also, either side of that agreement, there are blessings and there are punishments. So there are, if you do things, they will go this way. If you do good things, they'll go this way. If you do bad things, they'll go that way. So there are consequences, positive and negative, for the outworking or lack thereof of the covenant. And so this is the covenantal promises that God is stating very clearly in chapter 26. And like you said, Jeremiah refers back to it, and that is because the people of Israel, spoiler alert, don't keep God's covenant and end up being cast out of Israel. And so they are encountering the punishments that God has laid out very clearly already up to this point. So
yep.
Then chapter 27 is all about vows, which is interesting. Yep, Jeremy.
Which is another type of offering.
Yeah.
Right?
Do you have any closing thoughts? Anything that you wanted to say about Leviticus that you didn't get a chance to, or didn't go as in depth as you wanted to?
No. So it's a book to the Levites on how to lead,
mm-hmm.
at the same time to the people, so that they know the different ways of the system to make it right, so that they can still hang out with God. And so we can learn a ton about it, but now that Jesus replaces all of this, it gets a bit weird, because we're like, well, I don't have to do that, I don't want to do that. But it can also show us principles for living, like how God mm-hmm. wants to promote life in certain ways. So it's a fascinating book. You should all read
it. Yeah. I feel like the book of Leviticus has one goal, and it is to lay out very clearly procedural, let's just say procedures, not procedural procedures, Department of Redundancy Department. God lays out very clearly a procedure by which the people can get right with God and remain in a position of right relationship, maintain that relationship.
Yep.
And that is through sacrifices. It's through the priestly role as well, and it's also through cleanliness and uncleanness, obviously not resulting in being right with God. But you get what I mean. So I think the goal of Leviticus is it's just single, and it's to show people how they can get right with God practically.
Yeah.
Or at least maintain their relationship. So that brings us to the end of Leviticus, but not to the end of the season. We will get through the book of Numbers as well. There are a lot more narrative stories in this book, and I'm looking forward to...
And a lot of names.
Lots of names. I was looking through the Bible and noticed in Numbers that I don't have yours. Yeah, looking forward to doing an overview of Numbers in the next episode, and briefly looking at some of the themes present throughout it, and getting into the nitty-gritty of some of stories and laws and lots of numbers. So looking forward to that. I hope you all are as well. You shouldn't need to wait very long. My name is Ryan.
And I am Jeremy.
And the moral of the story, of this story that we went through today, is to sell everything you own. No, that's not true.
It's be racist to vampires. Yep.
And be very, very generous when you're 50 years old.
To vampires.
Just live radically in a joyful, celebratory, compassionate, generous kind of way, remembering to always be racist to vampires. That's it. Scripture read badly. The book of Leviticus.
Well.
We're moving forward in the Bible, and you're moving forward in your life.